Welcome back to Devils Talking Padres. Dominic Stern here, alongside with me is Bobby Murphy. We're here to recap, I guess, the trade deadline for the Padres, talk about the series against the Rockies, and then look ahead to the upcoming two-game series against the Oakland Athletics. It was a tough weekend to be a Padres fan. I think it was definitely one of the tougher weekends of the season. But at the end of the day, the Padres, they're 14 games over 500, currently in a playoff spot. And I think that's how Padres fans need to look at things. Bobby, how are you?
I'm doing good, Dom. Of course, very disappointed after this weekend, only splitting four with the Rockies. But, I mean, just that trade deadline was even more tough. Not being able to get Scherzer if we wanted Scherzer, really depending on what we would have traded. We'll talk about that more soon. But kind of a sad weekend, but at least we were able to salvage a split on Sunday.
Yeah, it was a rough series, and there's a lot of stuff that was going on outside of it, and they weren't there 100% mentally, you could tell. And I'm hoping that changes with the off day going into Oakland, but let's talk about the things that happened outside of it. The trade deadline on July 30th, it didn't go as many Padres fans expected. Everyone knew going into the trade deadline that the big Padres need going in was starting pitching, and AJ Preller did not land a starting pitcher, which is fine, but it was kind of the way that he didn't land a starting pitcher that hurt a lot of people. On Thursday, Ken Rosenthal, the senior insider for The Athletic, tweeted out that the Padres were close to acquiring Max Scherzer of the Washington Nationals, who of course is one of the best pitchers of this generation and still currently one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball right now. And unfortunately, the deal fell through and he never got acquired, and it just left Padres fans in the dust, because then Max Scherzer, along with Trey Turner, who is one of the best shortstops in baseball, got dealt to the Los Angeles Dodgers, of course, the Padres' rivals. So that was a big break in the heart. What were your thoughts on that situation, Bobby?
So we all knew that Scherzer was in intense talks with the Dodgers, and it just came out of nowhere. We all knew that Trey Turner was on the block. Everyone except for Soto was, but it just hurt that the Dodgers got, of course, both Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, and it just makes them so much better. And like we always say a lot, Dodgers are just to make that one extra step that we don't make just to get one step better than us. And it sucks that we're going to have to face maybe Scherzer in the playoffs at some point when we're so close to doing it. But I mean, it's tough that he's on the Dodgers, of course. I myself would not have given up our top two prospects for Max Scherzer, but it just sucks to see him in a Dodger uniform, and just tough that we will have to go against two of some of the top players in baseball.
Yeah, it's going to make the Dodgers an even more tougher obstacle to climb over. They also did not address their biggest need, because their biggest weakness was the bullpen. So, I mean, you could look at it that way, but they got Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. So I don't think too many Dodgers fans are that upset. But the Padres, however, that night, they did acquire Daniel Hudson for Jordy Barley and Mason Thompson. Of course, Mason Thompson is the much bigger name going back and return for Daniel Hudson. Hudson, very good relief pitcher after kind of having an up and down career. He revitalized himself in Washington. He got the final out in the 2019 World Series when the Washington Nationals became champions of Major League Baseball. What were your thoughts on this trade?
I like this trade a lot. I mean, we all knew that the Padres needed depth in the bullpen, and we get Daniel Hudson, who's not young. He's 34, but he's been having a phenomenal year, 2.20 ERA, 48 strikeouts in 32 and two-thirds innings. I mean, the last few years, he's been pitching well. I mean, really, except for last year, but he had a great 2019, of course, getting traded to the Nats midseason. But he's been having a great year, and I mean, he's going to be a great seventh or eighth inning guy for us, and he'll really help the Padres bullpen late in the game, and especially eighth inning, go right ahead of Melanson. I love that right there.
I thought it was a good move as well. And, you know, wasn't the pitcher from Washington that we wanted, but good acquisition. Very good relief pitcher. He's done well as of late. High 90s fastball with a wipeout slider. He's going to be a good addition to this bullpen. You said he goes in the eighth inning. I'd probably agree there. And I think the best part of that is that it's going to diminish some of the roles of the Padres relievers who I think weren't necessarily in spots where they need to be in. I've already talked about Tim Hill and Austin Adams kind of being in a little bit too big of roles, sometimes coming in situations where I don't think they're built to succeed, such as, you know, just coming in like the seventh or the eighth inning and needing three outs against the middle of the order. That's not where I'd like to see them. I'd like to see them coming in the middle of the inning, you know, after like Craig Stammen gets an inning in a third or something like that, you know, have them come in and get two outs and match them up against guys in their lineup. So I think you'll see those guys more in those roles. I think you also see Pagan more in the seventh now instead of in the eighth, because sometimes Pagan is really good. Sometimes he is not. Sometimes his fastball is has a ton of life to it. Sometimes it doesn't. So I think seeing him in the seventh inning a little bit more will be a little bit better for him and for the Padres bullpen. And it just brings in another arm that probably isn't as abused as some of these bullpen arms in the Padres bullpen have been. We've talked about it. Tim Hill leads all bullpen players and appearances in all of baseball. So those arms are going to get tired. This just brings in another arm. And I think it also just decreases the need of having to call up the guys like Nabil Chrismat, Miguel Diaz, although Miguel Diaz has been good. So is Chrismat, Daniel Camarena, James Norwood. Those guys, they're not needed as much at the major league level. So I think that's more of what this move does. And it's going to be interesting come crunch time in the playoffs, who's going to be on that 26-man roster, because you're not going to carry as many guys in the starting rotation. You're going to see some starters get pushed out to the bullpen. And which guys in the bullpen don't make the postseason roster? But I can tell you one thing, Daniel Hudson, if the Padres do make the postseason, he will be on that postseason roster.
I totally agree. And you see all these teams make winning World Series, and they all are acquiring relief depth for the bullpen. And that's what wins World Series. That's what wins playoff games. And that's what gets you deep into the postseason. But trading Mason Thompson, I was totally fine with. I mean, he's 23. He's only pitched three innings for the Padres this year. And he was really struggling in AAA with El Paso, had a 5.74 ERA in 26 and two-thirds innings. So, I believe he was number 9 in on our prospect list, but I don't say he was expendable, but it's like it was a great acquire, and I was totally fine with that trade.
Yeah, I was bummed to see him go. I thought that he was certainly a guy that the Padres could use at the major league level, and I think that I personally, and I think I'm in the minority in saying this, I was more bummed to see him go than I was to see the other right-handed pitcher go, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But Mason Thompson, he throws 99. He's got a good slider. I thought that he could have been in the bullpen over some of the other guys that the Padres kept calling up, but that obviously wasn't my call, and I thought that he was going to be a part of this Padres pitching staff for at least the next couple of years. So I was kind of disappointed, but I think Daniel Hudson is going to bring a lot of value to this team. Now, it is important to note Daniel Hudson is on the COVID-19 list. I'm not sure if he contracted the virus or if he's just in isolation right now, but he was a part of the breakout within the Washington Nationals organization. So he is not going to appear on the Padres for a little bit. Just a heads up in case you're wondering where he is. He's not hurt. He's just sick, or he's quarantining from the virus. So that is that on that trade. Let's talk about the other trade. This trade was finalized right before the trade deadline on Friday, July 30th. And this was a much smaller trade, in my opinion. The Padres acquired Jake Mariznick, right-handed hitting outfielder, primarily a center fielder, from the Cubs in exchange for Anderson Espinosa. And a lot of Padres fans were super upset to see Anderson Espinosa go. Did you share those same feelings, Bobby?
I mean, it's tough to be super upset with it. He's been in the high this season. He's been struggling, but this is the first season he's pitched since 2016. And having two Tommy John surgeries, it sucks, of course. And it's really going to hinder his career. I know a lot of time Tommy John is always like, it's like a pitcher needs it. Like, it's good. sometimes. But after not pitching for 5 years, that makes it really tough. He's a great young pitcher. I would have liked to keep him, but I understand why we did. He just has not been able to stay healthy, and he just was on the mound pitching in a real game for the first time since 2016 this year.
I agree. I mean, obviously it sucked to see him go because at one time he was the Padres' top prospect, and then he of course had Tommy John surgery, and then he fell, and then he had Tommy John surgery a second time, and then he fell out of the Padres' top 30 at one point, and then a lot of the players have been sold off and he's jumped back in, and he was in the top 10 at one point, I believe, for Pipeline, and it sucks because he's a guy that I think a lot of Padres fans are going to root for, knowing what he could have been and knowing how much he's gone through and just knowing the potential he has. And I think a lot of Padres fans are going to hope to see him have success with the Cubs. I'm not too bummed. I share the same sentiments with you. I just didn't see him having that big of an impact. Like, he's never going to be the starting pitcher that a lot of Padres fans once thought he could be. He was more going to have a relief pitching role. And I hope that the Cubs treat him well and that he can make it up with the Cubs, because certainly a tough pill to swallow knowing that he was such a highly touted prospect and knowing that it basically got thrown away because of injuries. We'll never know what he could have done with the Padres, but he now has a chance with the Cubs, who are rebuilding, and I'm sure he'll be in the major leagues in 2 to 3 years, barring any other injuries. But in return, the Padres got Jake Mariznick, their backup center fielder, and he's also going to be the Padres' backup center fielder, but he's much better against left-handed pitching than he is against right-handed pitching. And Trent Grisham, who we'll talk about in a little bit, he's been struggling mightily. So for him to have a guy come in who could possibly platoon with him against left-handed pitching, I think that can help him. And also make sure to keep him healthy, because he's, of course, been on the injured list twice so far this season. And the Padres try to keep him rested, and they keep trying to put guys in center field. Tommy Pham and Jerickson Profar have not looked good out there. So I think that having Mariznick out there, who his glove has always been the best part of his game, can certainly help the Padres a ton.
And I'm a fan of this trade because of his defense. I mean, he's not a huge bat at all. He only played 16 games last year, even in the shortened season, and hit .333, but that's not much to look at after only 16 games. But he's hitting .221 this year. I mean, he's not a huge bat, but I like the move just solely because of his defense. I know he'll be a backup center fielder, but I mean, we've seen Profar. I mean, Profar has made some nice diving catches the past week or two, but a lot of the time it's hard to watch him in center. It's hard to watch him in left. He's not a good outfielder. And Tommy Pham isn't the worst, but feels much better just knowing that we're going to have Mariznick out there in the outfield late in games for just some defensive substitution other than Profar or Pham.
And what also to talk about is the fact that why does Profar make those diving plays and whatnot? Because he's not a good outfielder. He doesn't get good jumps. He's not the fastest guy in the world. Those balls that he makes diving catches on, Trent Grisham and Jake Mariznick are standing under them, or they're at least catching them on the run. So, like, obviously, I'm never going to, like shun someone for making a diving play, but, like, when they show the replay, I'm like, all right, why is he making a diving play on this? Was he out of position? Did he get a bad jump? Did he take a bad route? And normally it's the last two of those three things for Jerickson Profar, but he's fine in left field. He was bad in center field, and it was tough to watch sometimes. So I think that is that for the trade deadline stuff. You got any other notes you want to talk about? We can talk about what some other teams acquired and whatnot, or do you just want to skip that?
Up with the Dodgers, and that's all that matters to me right now. Chris Bryant, do love the acquisition for the Giants. That's a huge move for them, but that's pretty much all I wanted to mention.
Yeah, the Giants got Chris Bryant. He's a rental as well. Trey Turner, he's a Dodger next year too. I think we should also point that out. Max Scherzer is a rental. But Chris Bryant is a rental for the Giants. And it's also important to know that the people who said, like, oh, they totally fleeced the Cubs, they really didn't. Position player rentals typically don't carry that much value on the trade market, like in terms of like prospects and whatnot, just because they aren't deemed as important as starting pitchers and relief pitchers. And the way that Chris Bryant has played over the last 2 months, not the best hitter. He's certainly not playing like the MVP candidate that he was for the first 2 months of the season. So I don't think that they fleeced the Cubs like a lot of Giants fans were saying, but I do think that was a very good pickup, and that brings in a bat that has a ton of postseason experience. Because if you look at that team, sure, they have Buster Posey, Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford, some of the other guys that have been with that team for a while, but they also have a lot of guys who have absolutely no playoff experience, like none whatsoever, and have been like scrubs around the league that they have picked up and they have put into roles where they succeed. And that's why the Giants have been good this year, but none of those guys have succeeded in the playoffs. Chris Bryant has. Now, I mean, he really hasn't since 2016, because it's been very well documented the struggles of the Cubs offensive players since they won the World Series. But Chris Bryant has been on the big stage and he's done it before. And I think that is the biggest part of that trade acquisition for the Giants. So would you agree with me on that?
I would. I mean, we love Chris Bryant. I mean, of course, from University of San Diego, loved him on the Cubs. I wish him the best in San Francisco. Hope he loses every game. But huge fan of Chris Bryant, and that he's going to be a phenomenal acquisition for them rest of the season.
I agree. All right, let's talk about this past Padres series. The first game, Thursday, this was game one of the series, and it was played with Fernando Tatis Jr. And you got to start with talking about Joe Musgrove, because Joe Musgrove was phenomenal in this game. Seven innings, 11 strikeouts. To me, it was a start that said, hey, Padres were trying to get Max Scherzer because myself and the rest of the rotation had been struggling. But I'm out here. I'm going to show that we don't need Max Scherzer, at least because of me. And he pitched like that. And it was a ton of fun to watch. He didn't allow any runs. The Padres shut out the Rockies. The Padres, they scored with no outs in the first and with two outs in the eighth. In the first inning, they scored on a Fernando Tatis Jr. double after a Tommy Pham double. And then in the eighth inning, they scored on a Jake Cronenworth home run after a Tommy Pham walk, I believe. I believe it was a walk. But he got on base. Yeah, it was a walk. It was a fun game. It was a short game. A lot shorter than a lot of the other Padre games I've been to. But the Padres also got thrown out at home twice in two situations where they really didn't need to be thrown out at home. So you'd like to see them be a little bit more careful on the base paths. We obviously like the base running aggressiveness. It's created a lot of runs for the Padres this year. But there's a difference between base running aggressiveness and base running stupidity. And we will talk about base running stupidity when we're done talking about this game, because that'll, of course, be the first thing we talk about with game two. But fun game right here. Drew Pomeranz came in and threw a scoreless inning, and then Mark Melanson came in and got the save. So any thoughts here on game one?
I mean, of course, the main thing in this game was Joe Musgrove. I mean, his last two starts, he's been phenomenal. Seven shutout, 11 Ks is awesome. And we've been saying this for the past few months, for almost the entire season, that Musgrove has been our number two starter the entire year. And he keeps pitching like this. I mean, second half of the season, he could be our number one. Darvish is really struggling right now, and Musgrove has been lights out. But I mean, he's pitched a phenomenal game. Pomeranz and Melanson did their thing. And I mean, just some clutch hits by the Padres. Pham, 2-for-3. Hosmer, 2-for-3. Padres had 9 hits. But I mean, that Cronenworth home run off the pole is beautiful. Love to see the Crone zone. But it's just some neat, much needed cushion bottom of the eighth. It's the way Melanson, I don't say has been pitching. He's been pitching a lot better, not getting too scary. I know that he did allow a hit in the ninth, but some nice cushion there thanks to Cronenworth, and just a great shutout win right here.
Yeah, and they got to Daniel Bard in that eighth inning. He was the Rockies closer that decided to hold on to him at the trade deadline, which the Rockies, they were definitely the center of a lot of controversy at the trade deadline. But the Padres, they got the Bard there in the ninth, and then they also got to him in the ninth on Saturday. They got to him on the eighth on Thursday. But overall, good win from the Padres on Thursday, showing that they need a starting pitcher. But game two, this game went about as bad of any Padres game could have gone. The first inning, Ryan Weathers got screwed. I don't think there's really any other way to say it other than this. He got the first two guys out, And then he should have struck out the three hitter CJ Cron, but he got kind of squeezed. Next batter, Charlie Blackmon, hit a fly ball down the left field line. Left fielder for this game for the Padres was Adam Frazier. We have talked about he's not a left fielder. They're playing him in left field so they can get his bat in the lineup. And he straight up whiffed on this fly ball. And it was bad. He coasted to it. He didn't get under it. And then he missed it. Playing in that early stage of the game at Petco Park, it's in twilight. It can be tough to judge the fly balls. That's why you got to make sure you get under them to give you some time to adjust. And he didn't do that. And then all this stuff happened with two outs. They ended up taking the run off the board and ruling in a ground rule double, which was a horrible call. But it almost worked to the Padres' advantage. But then Elias Diaz got walked. And then Ryan Weathers allowed a grand slam to Ryan McMahon. So it's 4-0 going into the bottom of the first. Fernando Tatis Jr. ripped a single in the left field. And then Manny Machado once again belted the ball down the third base line. The third baseman, he fielded the ball, and then he went to get up and transfer it, and he lost the ball. And when that happened, the ball got away from him, and Fernando Tatis Jr. decided to attempt to run to third base. I just talked about it. There's a difference between base running aggressiveness and base running stupidity. We've seen Fernando Tatis Jr. make a lot of great plays on the base paths. This was not one of them. It was a very poor decision to move up. It cost his team an out, and it unfortunately, much more unfortunately, cost himself his shoulder, because not only did he cost his team an out, but he tried to slide around Brandon Rodgers. And when he did so, he tried to do a hook slide. He put his left shoulder, the shoulder that he's had a lot of problems with this year, and it came out of its socket again. And now Fernando Tatis Jr. is on the injured list. The team was dead for this game. And they ended up losing 9-4. The only four runs of this game came on two Manny Machado home runs. He's been tearing baseballs apart, but he was the only guy who produced in this lineup for this game. Really tough game to be at. The first inning was about as bad as any inning I've ever been to. You got any thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, about Tatis, we always see, I mean, it seems like a lot of the plays he gets injured on are him just going the extra mile, going the extra inch to get to the base, get a ball, be safe. And I'm just amazed that on all the times he does the splits or whatever, he's never pulled a groin or anything. I mean, he's just like, I love to see the aggressiveness, but sometimes it's just too much. You got to be smart, and you can't be risking yourself like that, especially when, you know, I mean, I know you're just going in the moment, but when you have an injured shoulder, I mean, that's a tough play. And if he just, if he just stays right there, no injury, no IL for Tatis. But it's just, I mean, it's tough. Machado had a great game. Kim's been tearing the ball recently, but we'll talk about him in a sec. But, I mean, Weathers was just horrific in this game. 4 innings, 8 runs. I'm going to what I'll be back in San Diego this coming weekend. I'll be there on Friday, and he's scheduled to pitch. So hopefully he will be pitching a lot better then. But I mean, just a tough game. I'd love to see Chris Mack go 3 innings, only allowed 1 run. And I mean, it's just big to see. Saves the bullpen arms. The only runs that the Rockies had this game were all on home runs. They had one hit with a runner in scoring position because they're just nailing us for home runs. I mean, rest of the game, I mean, we shut them out from the 6th to the 9th, which is great to see, but Weathers was hard to watch this game, and so is pretty much the rest of the Padres lineup besides Machado.
Yeah, and John Gray in this game went 6 1/3 with 2 earned runs and 4 strikeouts. He is a free agent at the end of this year, and he certainly would have been a great addition to the San Diego Padres. Now, I don't know if the Rockies would have been willing to give him up to the Padres, but I sure hope that the Padres at least called and asked, hey, what would a return from us for John Gray be like? Because John Gray has been really good this year. He's been really good against the Padres, and bringing him into pitch at Petco Park as opposed to Coors Field would have been a help for him as well. So that certainly sucked to see him the day that the trade deadline expired come out and pitch really well against the Padres, knowing that the Padres didn't get any starting pitching. So that was not fun at all. This game just sucked. Like, it was demoralizing because my family season ticket package, it's Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and then some Monday games. So I'm there just about every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, unless I have something else I need to be doing. But my friends wanted to go to a game together. So I said, all right, we can go on this Friday. And of course, this was the game that he got hurt. It was one of the few games that the two games that I've like bought tickets outside for at Petco Park. One was the Tatis return from COVID-19 list. And the other one was the one that he got hurt in. So some Tatis injured list magic is going to happen when I buy tickets for Padre games at Petco Park. So I'll need to think about that either before I head back to Arizona or just in the future. But game number three, Saturday night game, Fernando Tatis Jr. bobblehead, Nate. It's very fitting that, of course, a bobblehead is being given out the day after he got hurt. That just sucked, but it didn't suck as much as this game. Another really tough game. In the third inning, the Rockies scored two runs. After Yu Darvish, he walked the eight hitter and Sam Hilliard. Then Hilliard stole second and moved up on a Marquez swinging bunt down the line. And then their leadoff hitter, Charlie Blackmon, he hit a ground ball that Frazier had to dive for, and that was good enough for Hilliard to score from third. And then the next batter with two outs, Brendan Rodgers, hit a solo home run. The Padres responded in the third inning with a Jake Cronenworth two-run home run. So that was, of course, nice to see. That was his third game, or that was his second game in the series, hitting a home run. And then in the fifth inning, it kind of got away from the Padres once again as they hit two more solo home runs, one from their catcher, Elias Diaz. The other one was from Herman Marquez, who hit the ball 418 feet on a ball that was not fun to watch. In the sixth inning, they also added on another run. And then the Padres, they tried to get a rally going in the ninth. Jerickson Profar doubled, then Austin Nola singled. That brought up the tying run to the plate. They pinch ran Jorge Mateo for Austin Nola, which I was talking about the decision with my dad. He just said, well, hey, we got Frazier, and then we got Cronenworth up next. Those guys don't need pinch runners for. You might as well get Mateo in there, see if you can get an extra bag or whatnot. But he also said that they might have just been looking to avoid an Austin Nola injury and might as well get Mateo in the game anyways. He did not steal. And when he did not steal, Adam Frazier grounded into a game-ending double play. Didn't bring up Cronenworth, didn't bring up Machado, and the Padres lost 5-3. They're able to get another run off Daniel Bard. I'm not sure why the Padres struggled so much against the Rockies bullpen, except for their closer. But that was the way the series went. What are your thoughts on this third game?
Darvish is the main thing. I mean, he's really been struggling. Six innings, five runs, eight strikeouts. His stuff was looking good, but he was getting worked hard. Had 102 pitches, and it all just fell apart fifth, sixth inning. I mean, knock it up. Hate on him if he loves two runs. But we know that he's going to be going deep into games. I mean, we're not just going to take him out in the fifth or sixth inning because it's Yu Darvish. And if he's dealing, then keep him in. If he's in a jam, maybe try and let him work through it. And, I mean, he just was getting hit hard. I mean, Herman Marquez hitting that home run, I mean, that hurts. But Marquez pitched amazing this game. He went six innings, seven Ks, only four hits. I mean, Padres really couldn't do anything, I mean, except for another Cronenworth home run and the Nola single that you mentioned for those two. But it's a tough game. I mean, the guys at the top of our lineup were hitting. That's pretty much it. I mean, Frazier, Cronenworth, Machado each had one hit. Hosmer had two, but the pitchers are not getting much help. Only three runs for the Padres in this game. Bullpen was great. I mean, Tim Hill struck out two in one inning. Pagan struck out the side in the eighth. And then Stammen pitched a scoreless ninth. But Darvish really has to pick it up if he wants to be a starter for us in a potential wildcard game.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say right now, if the Padres are in the wildcard game, I think you give the ball to the San Diego and Joe Musgrove, which I would not have probably said that a month ago. Darvish had a very rough month, ERA over seven, and it went up with five earned runs in six innings here from Darvish. So, I mean, once again, he gave the Padres length, but when you allow five runs, it really doesn't matter that much how long you go, because five runs is not a good start. Now, six innings, five runs is better than three innings, five runs, but at the end of the day, not a good start from Darvish. His command just isn't there. When he's making mistakes, he's getting punished. When he's not, he's striking batters out and getting weak contact. So him and Victor Caratini, they got some work to do. They got to figure it out, because over the next 2 months, the Padres are really going to need the Yu Darvish that we saw early on in the year. Now, it appears that the sticky substances were helping out Yu Darvish a lot, and they're going to have to readjust and find a way to recreate a good Yu Darvish, because the Padres need that. Otherwise, they're not going to come off as big of winners of that trade as between the Cubs, as a lot of Padres fans and just baseball people expected. So game three was a stinker, and it left me very pessimistic about this Padres team, because once again, the Giants and Dodgers, they won, and the Reds, they were playing great baseball. I'm starting to think, well, we're not a lock to make the playoffs anymore. But then the Padres responded on Sunday by scoring four runs in the first inning and dominating the Rockies 8-1. Chris Paddock got placed on the injured list after his bullpen session, which he strained his oblique, which oblique injuries are never fun to deal with for professional athletes. So his timetable is really TBD. But Reese Kinnear, he came up and started for Chris Paddock, and he did what was asked of him. He gave three innings of one-run ball for the Padres. You know, they're not really asking a ton out of Kinnear, and I think that's the smart thing to do. Don't let him get roughed up, because you want to, one, keep his confidence high, and two, you want to give the Padres the best chance to win. And with the off day on Monday, you can kind of tax the bullpen, knowing that every single one of them is going to get a day off for that day, and then they'll be good to go on Tuesday. The bullpen came in through six scoreless innings, and they didn't really have to, because the Padres offense actually woke up. They scored in four straight innings, which is something they have not done in a long time, scoring the fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh innings. In the fourth inning, Eric Hosmer came off the bench for a pinch hit double. So he is continuing to stay hot. It wasn't just a July thing, or at least we don't think that right now, because on August 1st, he's batting 1,000 with a 2,000 slugging percentage in August. So shout out to him. In the fifth inning, Myers, he drove in a run on a single, scoring Cronenworth. In the sixth inning, Ha-Sung Kim absolutely belted a home run. It was on a 97 mile an hour fastball, which I believe is the fastest pitch that he has hit a home run on this year. And then in the seventh inning, Austin Nola got a sac fly. But the Padres bullpen, it was dealing. They had six guys, each record three outs. Really fun to watch. Tim Hill, he struck out three guys. He also walked two. Pierce Johnson struck out a guy. He walked one, though. Drew Pomeranz, Emilio Pagan, and Miguel Diaz each allowed hits, but Pomeranz struck out two. Pagan didn't strike anyone out, but he only threw six pitches because he got a double play ball. And Miguel Diaz struck out two in the ninth while allowing two hits. What were your thoughts on this game? Very encouraging game.
One of my favorite things to see from this game, two things. 5-for-11 with runners in scoring position. Love to see that. Padres finally were able to get to Gomber. I mean, in the first inning, he allowed four runs, and he's been dealing against us all year in his two starts. But, I mean, just love to see the early offense, the clutch doubles, the Kroner's two-run double, and Kim's two-run double. We had four doubles in this game and the home run. But with Tatis out, great game from Ha-Sung Kim. 2-for-3 with a run and three RBIs. And just love to see him just crush a fastball. I mean, 420 feet to left. Love to see that. He had a phenomenal game. I mean, Pham really struggled 0-for-4. Frazier went 0-for-4. But Cronenworth 3-for-4 and Kim 2-for-3. Those guys both had great games. And if Kim can somewhat keep this up a little bit, I mean, not the same thing every game, of course, but he can stay hot. That'll be huge while Tatis is out. But just a great game from the entire Padres roster today. I mean, the bullpen was phenomenal after Canaro went three innings, one run. I'll take that from him every time. But six shutout from the bullpen was awesome. We saw Stammen have a 9-pitch inning. Tim Hill strike out the side. Pomeranz, Diaz each had two Ks. But it was just, I mean, really good game overall from everyone.
Yeah, from the pitching staff, it's a really good game from everyone. But Jake Mariznick, it was his Padres debut in this game. He went 0-for-3 strikeouts. One of them, he got a really bad strike three call, but he also got hit by a pitch. And I mean, he's going to play good defense. And they started Mariznick in this game because they were facing a left-handed pitcher. His one at-bat against that starting pitcher, it was the bad strike three call. And then Austin Gomber, who had dominated the Padres to start the season, he only lasted one inning. So Mariznick didn't really get that opportunity. And then Trent Grisham, he had another rough game, 0-for-2 with a strikeout. He did hit a ball kind of hard, but Grisham's struggling. What was once a really promising season has kind of gone out the window. now batting 246 with a 336 OBP and a 426 slugging. So still an above average season compared to the rest of the major leagues, but it's definitely not that elite center fielder that we had been seeing. He definitely needs to figure it out at the plate. And I think that right now a platoon is definitely imminent because it'll give him some more rest so that he can be in the right state of mind and be right physically, but also to put him in the best situations matchup wise. Tommy Pham also had a very rough series, back to back over 4-3 strikeout games for him. He is definitely also not having that great season that he had been having now. I mean, still compared to where he once was earlier this year, dating back to April and May, doing a lot better, but once again, 362 OBP, 404 slug. So it's coming back down towards average for those two, and they need to be better because the Padres, they went out and acquired two guys that can play the outfield at the trade deadline, and they could certainly be seeing some playing time going away if they don't continue to pick it up.
And that's why I'm glad that we made these moves. I mean, getting Frazier, I mean, obviously a lot of tough games, not going to worry about him at all too much, but I mean, that's why we got Frazier, just to have this depth. I mean, if Pham keeps struggling, Grisham keeps struggling, we just push one of those guys out, push Frazier right in, push Mariznick right in there. I mean, that's why everyone was a huge fan of the move, really. I mean, Padres, fleece the Pirates. It was awesome. But for the MLB hit leader, I mean, you're always going to love that. But I'm not too worried about Grisham or Pham, really. I mean, if they mostly keep struggling, keep slumping, then I will be. But huge Grisham fan. I mean, his defense and center is elite, among the best in the league, with his gold glove last year. But I'm not going to worry about them too much, and hopefully they can just get their groove back.
It'll be interesting to see how those guys respond because they're hurting the Padres right now. And while the pitching staff hasn't been good as of late, no one's going to deny that. The offense really hasn't been good either. Now, they got some key contributors of late, like Machado and Hosmer, but guys like Grisham and Pham, they're holding the offense back right now, and the Padres need them to be better. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about this upcoming series against the Oakland A's. If you want to hear us talk more about the roster of the Oakland A's, you can go back 2 episodes ago. You can catch the end of that podcast. We went super in-depth on their roster, and I also had a friend of ours from ASU, sports journalism major Parker Dunn, Oakland A's fan, come on and talk about the team. He went in-depth there, so you can go and find that as well. But for now, we're just going to talk about this upcoming series. The A's, they went out and got a couple of trade deadline acquisitions themselves. Their big one was Starling Marte, who did not play against the Padres, even though he was acquired that night. It just didn't make sense for him to come out and play against the Padres. However, he did play in this past series for them, and he was pretty good. But Starling Marte is a very good player, as we saw for the Miami Marlins, hitting .313 on the year. Those are his A's stats. But he started off 5-for-16 for the A's. All of his hits were singles, but he also drew 3 walks and he stole 4 bases. So already making an impact for the A's. And the Padres are definitely going to need to be careful with him because he is a very good player. They also got Josh Harrison, who we saw for the Nationals, contact bat, could play the outfield, could play second base. And Yan Gomes, catcher for the Nationals as well. He was in the same trade. He hit a home run and has 2 hits for the Nationals for the A's so far this year. So that's really our roster update for them. It's kind of the same guys, but the 2 pitches they will be throwing, Shamania, who the Padres saw in that Wednesday day game, and Frankie Montas, who was supposed to be one of their best starting pitchers, really strong right-handed arm. He was really good in 2019, but he was suspended for PEDs. And he hasn't really been the same since. In 119 innings this year, he's 132 strikeouts, so he's a big strikeout guy with a 4.08 ERA. So those are the guys that are throwing for the A's. What do you make of that situation?
Yeah, I mean, these are 2 tough matchups we're going against. Shamania just absolutely shut us out last Wednesday. 6 innings, 9 Ks, 1 hit, shutout. He had a great start. And Montas, I mean, he's been pitching phenomenal the past month, 2.30 ERA in the month of July. Didn't allow more than three runs in his last five starts, all in July. And he got into the sixth inning in every single one of them. I mean, his last few starts, he's gone seven shutout, six innings, three runs, six innings, two runs. And he's been dealing right now. But he's just won 3 out of 4 against the Angels. And, I mean, they were on for the entire pitching staff. In the games, they allowed zero runs, one run in a 1-0 loss, and then three runs. So 4 runs in a 4-game series is also something to be happy about for a fan of that team. But they're pitching well, and they're looking good.
Talented team. They still hold the wild card spot, so the Padres are going to have to come out and give them all they've got. For the Padres, the two starting pitchers they'll be throwing out are Blake Snell and Joe Musgrove. Blake Snell was really bad against them in his last start. I don't think there's really any other way around it. He didn't last long, and he allowed 7 runs. And prior to that start, he had been really good at home. We had talked about it. He'd only allowed 7 earned runs at home on the year, but he allowed 7 earned runs in that start. He's been better on the road as of late. His last 3 starts on the road have been his best 3 road starts of the year. So you want to see that be continued from Blake Snell. Add on a top 4 road start. Now, hopefully it's his best road start, say 5+ scoreless. It's something that he's not been able to do yet on the road. Let's see if he can do that here in Oakland. His start in Miami was really good. You want to see him build on it.
Yeah, and I mean, Snell's just been so inconsistent. 3 of his last 4 starts, he's only gone 4 innings. Allowed 7 runs, 1 run, 4 runs, and 0 runs his last 4 starts respectively. But, I mean, he's just so inconsistent. He's been hard to watch pitch. And against the A's, I mean, 7 runs and 4 innings his last start was really tough. But Musgrove's coming out for the second game in the series, and he's been hot. His last 2 starts, he's gone 7 shutout, 11 Ks, and then 6 innings, 2 runs, 4 Ks. He's been pitching really well. He had three out of his 5 starts last month were very good. The other 2, not too good. But, I mean, I'm loving what Musgrove's showing us right now. He's won his last 2 decisions and now has a sub-3 ERA. So he's been dealing, and if he can keep it up, that'll be huge for the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, Musgrove, he's been in the league for a couple of years, and he also spent some time in the AL West against the A's, 23 innings, 3.13 ERA with a 1.261 whip. 8 of those games, 4 of them were starts. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds. I can't imagine he's pitched recently against the A's because I know he hasn't this year. I obviously know he didn't last year because he was in the NL and they were in the AL, and one was in the Central and one was in the West. So that was not possible. But also looking at it ballpark-wise, in Oakland, he has made 3 appearances. One of them was a start. He's gone 6 2/3 innings, and he's a 2.7 ERA. So he pitched better in Oakland than he did, per se, in Houston or in Pittsburgh against the A's. So there's your Joe Musgrove scouting report against Oakland. Blake Snell is just not a good matchup for the A's because we all know it's the cliche Moneyball phrase. Does he get on base? They work long at-bats. They foul pitches off. They see balls. They're not aggressive outside of the strike zone. And those teams are normally very good against Blake Snell, and that's very bad for Blake Snell. That's why it was so shocking that he was really good in the World Series last year against the Dodgers, because the Dodgers are also one of those teams. And it's also why it's been shocking that Blake Snell has actually been good against the Dodgers this year. He's been really weird. Maybe he can make some adjustments and be a lot better to start on Tuesday against the A's. Very, very pitcher-friendly ballpark, so maybe he'll be better this time around for the Padres. You got any other notes for this upcoming series against the A's, or any other notes for this podcast?
Well, I mean, after this split with the Rockies, we're now 6.5 behind the Giants. We were creeping up in a little bit, but still 3.5 behind the Dodgers as of Sunday night. But just got to win at least one of these. I mean, obviously it would be nice to win 2. A's are a great team, but got to win at least one of these before we get Arizona at home this coming weekend.
Yeah, and my biggest concern is the Cincinnati Reds. They're only 4 games behind the Padres. So I'm more concerned about the Reds than I am about the NL West at this point, because if the Padres win, then they'll catch up to the Dodgers and the Giants naturally. But if they don't win, I'm way more concerned about the Reds than possibly falling out of the division race, because the Dodgers and the Giants, I believe, are much better than the Reds. But the Reds are playing great baseball as of now, winning 7 of their last 10, going into Citi Field and winning the series against a very good Mets team that plays well at home. So I'm more concerned with the Reds personally. Now, I do not think the Reds are this good per se. They're 56-50 with a +1 run differential, and the Padres beat them 6 out of 7 times. So if the Padres do tie them and they need to play an initial game to figure out who's in the wildcard game, it'll be at Petco Park, which is a huge advantage for the Padres. But I'm more concerned with the Reds at this point. So they're 56-50. The Padres, once again, 14 games above 500. I'm still happy with how the season is going, but certainly disappointing considering the talent on this team and considering how they have looked at some times. So now you got anything else?
Just got to win at least one of these games, and can't wait to be there on Friday. Padres do have a day off on Thursday as well. So just day off, game, another day off. So let's see how the pitching staff can do.
Yeah. I'll also be at that next upcoming homestand. It'll be my last homestand for the Padres at Petco Park for me, as I'm getting ready to go back to Arizona. But this has been Devils Talking Padres. We thank you all for listening to this episode. This is an East Village Times podcast, so make sure to continue to check out our content at eastvillagetimes.com. We are doing in-depth breakdowns of the players that the Padres acquired. We're doing Loyal stuff, Aztec stuff. I'm still working on SDSU football season preview. So if you want to be up to date with the San Diego State Aztecs, eastvillagetimes.com should be your go-to website and source for that information. For Devils Talking Padres, I'm Dominic Stern. You can find me on Twitter at DMStern19. This is for Bobby Murphy. You can find him at BobbyMurphy2000 on Twitter. Make sure to follow us to see what we're thinking about the Padres and whatnot. This has been Devils Talking Padres. We thank you for tuning in, and we will catch you after this short 2-game series with the Oakland A's, ready to preview the upcoming series against the Arizona Diamondbacks this upcoming weekend. So thank you, and go Padres.